Hello and welcome to the 145th edition of the GoMeanGreen.com Barbershop Podcast. This is Evan.
This is Harry.
And this is Ashton.
And we are here to talk North Texas football. It is an off week. We, you know, not an off week. There's just a few weeks before the first game. And as you guys know, things are a little slow, but we've got some pretty good information today. So without any hesitation, let's go ahead and get into that. Ashton, tell us some good news, something we haven't seen before.
We have breaking news on the GoMeanGreen.com podcast.
I don't have any breaking news music.
Play the dun-dun.
Yeah.
Zach Whitfield is back on the team. I repeat, Zach Whitfield has returned to the Mean Green. Yay,
that's
Zach.
That's good information.
I like Zach. He's a good kid.
Well, he's a good player. I mean, he made some nice plays. I mean, just thinking of that Louisiana Tech game, I think he had an interception. He returned. And now the UTSA game, not so much last year, but he's had some good moments.
Yeah, you know, I haven't gotten the exact story on why he came back. I imagine he really missed it. He probably reached out to the coaches and thought, hey, you know, I really love it. I mean, I know the kid loves football, and he's a good kid. You know, like you said, I mean, he's really good in the classroom, by the way, and this is a really smart kid. But, I mean, anyway, it's one of those things where I think that he probably missed it and wanted to come back, and that's great.
So he was out for the spring, correct?
Yeah, I believe he left the program. He probably went back to grad school because he graduated in May. He's probably in grad school now. I don't think he was at practice a few weeks ago. Actually, I can go ahead and confirm that he was not at practice a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, someone in the chat room was saying that it was their breaking story, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, they can have
just
it.
Just kidding.
Because it was fake. I'm actually lying, guys. Zach Whitfield's not back on the team. This was all just a joke. No, but he, you know, it could be one of those things where I saw Zach, shook his hand today, didn't really get to talk to him too much about it, but he was out there, and I believe he returned to the team yesterday. So
that's good news, because I was a little disappointed that, I mean, obviously it wasn't one of the way you want to end your college career, but I think he can really help us out. There's no doubt.
And we're really young in the secondary, just in terms of, even if James Gray isn't young, he's new. And so you've got young Keyshawn, young James Gray. You got potential second round draft pick, I suppose, when Jamal Marshall apparently. And back there with a position change, you've got freshman DBs. You know, really, Kenny Byers is the only experienced cornerback out there in terms of game experience in a Mean Green uniform outside of Keyshawn towards the end of the season last year. So, yeah, I mean, this is great. And Zach's really fast. I mean, he's second or third fastest on the team now, as long as he's in shape.
Yeah, and it's going to take a little while, you know, to get back in game shape. But he's got experience. He's got skins on the wall, and that's good news if you're North Texas.
Absolutely. The guy can make plays. He's made plays before. I mean, this is a guy who also switched positions and, you know, from running back and went and could have had about 35 interceptions one season and ended up with a few. But Zach can make a play, and, you know, as long as he's healthy and he gets his conditioning back up. Zach's a natural athlete, so I imagine he didn't look fat today. Like, let's just put it that way. Like, you know, it
he
was
didn't
kid,
look fat. That's, he, a, he good, wasn't, that's a good
he
thing.
He wasn't, well, you didn't put on 10 pounds after you stopped playing. You know, he didn't, you know, he might not, I mean, I assume he's still working out, probably still running, you know, so, you know, hopefully he can contribute.
Somebody in the chat room, UNT 90 grad, said, how's his mom doing? And that reminded me, didn't his mom
Victoria.
Had the cancer, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, she's clean, okay. To my knowledge, still. She's clear. That the story I did last year, it ended with her getting the news on her anniversary that she was actually cancer-free.
Right.
She still has some health issues. I can't remember what the syndrome or disease is. It's not fatal, but it's kind of like debilitating, like it can just kind of take it out of you. And when I saw her towards the end of the season last year, she looked really good. I've not seen her since. I will look forward to seeing her, because she's really, really awesome. I mean, yeah. I was only able to meet a few parents along the way. Daniel Pryor's family is great. Zach Whitfield's mom, I spent a lot of time with when I was doing the story on her, and she's really cool. She's hilarious, and she makes me laugh a lot.
Well, that's good. That's good for him and her. I mean, obviously the family there, that things are going so well, and hopefully he'll be able to help contribute this year as well. It was a great segment last year. I remember that one. All right, so let's move on a little bit. Obviously not a lot's changed. We're still looking at the 1-2 punch probably not the best choice. 1-2 punch of McNulty and Greer. Is that what you're saying, Ashton? You're coming out as saying you are not drinking the DeMarcus Kool-Aid.
If I had to say right now, the season started today, I think that Greer's the number two. I think it's McNulty or bust. I really do.
Now,
I think
is that because of a lack of seeing on field DeMarcus, or you see him and you just don't? You're not seeing anything.
He makes mistakes.
Flashy?
I mean, he's getting the offense. He's grasping it. I don't think that he is. Like I said last week, I don't think that he's going to be able to just come in here and learn the offense and overtake it. But I don't think he's doing himself any favors right now. I see some mistakes he's making, and they're not overwhelmingly bad. I think Greer's actually played pretty well. I mean, it may not be as much of a downplay on DeMarcus as it is just maybe Greer's actually a really serviceable number two. And again, I said this last week, this is one of those things where, you know, experience could play out, and Greer knows the playbook in and out. So if anything does happen to McNulty, who I think is pretty firmly planted as a starter, then I think you're going to see Greer just based on the fact that he's not going to go out there and make a ton of mistakes. And here's where I get blown up in the chat room.
Well, so remind me, because I remember, obviously, we knew what happened with Greer in the first game. Now, the rest of the season, how much did we see of Greer? I think I blocked it out, or my therapist wanted me to block it out.
La Tech.
Okay, La Tech.
Three games we saw him. I mean, and I'm not
– SMU.
I'm not sitting here beating the drum for Josh Greer to be the starting quarterback.
Oh, that sounds
like
it.
Let's not – what? Let's not taking a knee is not a mistake, Adman.
You just think he's in a better position
DeMarcus. Now, what I see is Greer as a number two. That's it. I don't
you
want
didn't
him as
like,
a number two.
You didn't like Dijon, and now you don't like DeMarcus.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just going to let that go. You say what you will. I know nobody wanted to hear me say anything bad about Dijon last year. I was never a fan.
A&M Commerce,
and he's not even here anymore.
So Joe's
I'm just going to throw that out there now.
Adman's saying, why do you have a man crush on Josh Greer?
It's not nearly as big as his on Jamal Marshall.
Well, is A&M Commerce has proved you wrong that there's still some game left there.
Dejon's got the talent. I mean, it's never about that. It's just, I mean, Dejon's ceiling might even be higher than DeMarcus's in terms of like what he could do. I mean, Dejon had all the tools. That was never a question. It was a question. I'm sorry. There was one tool that he was lacking, and that's between the ears. He wasn't gonna grasp
maturity. It was maturity.
Go back and watch UAB. We don't have to keep talking about it, but if you watch that game, it makes you want to throw up in your mouth a little bit.
Pretty sure all the copies have been burned.
Yeah.
But no,
the Texas
game
kind of was that way too, though.
As the program got burned. Boom.
Wow. And we did find out.
They are the Blazers.
I need that.
This is worth mentioning. We did find out that he is transferring to Texas A&M Commerce. So he has found a place to land.
Who cares?
And he would be able to play right away because it's Division II school, I believe. So he doesn't have to sit out a year.
Or three.
Might be Division VII.
Well, you know what? You never want to wish bad things on anybody. Hopefully he can get it. There's a lot of complicated things going on in his life. Obviously, it didn't do a whole lot for us last year. There was, we're always looking for the next best thing. We're always looking for that quarterback. We're always hoping that we're going to be surprised and have something glorious at the quarterback
position. This program needs a poster child, star.
Do.
You know, we Lance do. Dunbar was for a while, but since then, you know, not so much.
No, nobody's really stepped into that shining position of the marquee player that we go, oh, you guys got that player. No, we don't.
Here's the thing, and this happens in the NFL, college, maybe even high school. Actually, it did happen at my school. The backup quarterback, when you're not winning, is a very attractive player because he's absolutely unknown. You have no idea what you're going to get. Now, Greer's situation is Greer's known. We know that he has limitations. Go back and watch the tape. I was there too. I saw it. I get it. But my point is that everybody is going to hoot and holler for DeMarcus just like they hollered for Brock Berglund. And do we have to go down the list of people? I don't think we do. But
I don't think Brock was given a fair shot.
God. God.
Just kidding.
All right, guys. With that,
you're right. You're right.
Now he's sitting on the bench at Northern Colorado.
That's just how it goes.
You know, they had benches there.
That's just how it goes. When you're not winning and you're failing, the other guy is always attractive.
You're
bet.
Exactly right.
And right now, I think that everybody wants to think that DeMarcus is going to come in and win us games. And he might be able to, all right? But right now, he's not the option. I mean, you got to go with McNulty. I want McNulty because I don't see enough out of DeMarcus to make me want DeMarcus to go in there. And I just want everybody to kind of temper their expectations on what DeMarcus coming in here means, because he wasn't here in the spring, and I do think that really hurt. I think that I was talking to a friend about this the other day. You got to look at it from the coach's perspective. The coaches didn't recruit him to come in here and transfer knowing that he was going to be out in the spring. I don't think they knew that was the case going into it. And then when that came down, when that news came down that he wasn't when he wasn't eligible, that throws your whole game plan out of whack. Maybe they were planning on him being the starter going into week one because he had all the spring and it was a new slate. They were going to roll him out there. Part of me has to think that was the case. As much as Chico does like McNulty, you know, McNulty may be the best backup quarterback ever because he's so damn smart and he gets it. And he's a good mentor and a good teacher. But when DeMarcus was brought in and then he was basically taken away for a little bit, that hurt things. And everybody needs to kind of just realize
that. You know, and just like we talked about, we've got an excessively long preseason here this year. Ridiculous. We probably wouldn't be talking about this, but obviously, and you're right. What you said is absolutely right. How many times did we hear people in the fans screaming for Nathan Toon as a backup quarterback? At here, TCU, Hiram Gonzalez. Everybody wanted to see the great Hiram Gonzalez, and he has never been wanted on the field more than he was wanted that one game. You're always looking for the backup quarterback to be the guy that surprises everybody and goes on an infamy. But it's the chances are it's not going to happen. McNulty's the guy this year, and that's who we're going to see. And let's hope that he has the Derek Thompson-type season his senior year.
Oh, I support him 100%. I mean, he's a good soldier. Yeah, I do. I mean, he's done everything they've asked him to do. This has never been about the fans disliking Andrew McNulty.
No.
It's never been that. It's been about, is he the best, most qualified person for the job? And based on last season, you know, we had a losing season. So whenever you have a quarterback that's, you know, in a losing season, people aren't going to be just thrilled about the fact he's coming back.
It's an uphill struggle for anybody to get some credibility back after the season we had last year, after the Texas game, after everything we went through last year. Everybody's going to have to prove it, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
Does everybody also needs to realize that if the best quarterback out there wasn't McNulty to start the game, to start week one, don't you think they would put him in there, whoever the best quarterback is? There's no love affair with McNulty on this team. They benched him. They chose Dejon over him. It could have. Greer got benched. Technically, McNulty was a number two, and they just said, screw it. Let's start the Dejon experiment.
Well, McNulty had a chance to prove himself at Texas, and he stepped right in there and threw an interception.
But we all know that when he went in, that they weren't going to throw Dejon into that situation, I think.
Well, no.
He wasn't even in town that week. He had the baby that week.
No, I mean, he wasn't at the game. He didn't go to the game.
He was at the game.
Was he?
He got to the game, yeah. He walked into the hotel when we pulled up in the bus. But my point is that, you know, the crap about Dejon not getting it, we need to give him a shot. We gave him a shot. Didn't work out. We went back to McNulty. There's no conspiracy theory. There's no anything about that with McNulty being it just because Mac likes him more. Then why didn't he beat out Derek Thompson 2 years ago? Why didn't he beat out Greer week one last year? Like, Greer got the shot. McNulty got benched twice essentially last season, maybe three times if you want to look at La Tech as another benching, because he didn't put him in, and then he didn't start against Indiana or Nickel State and then Indiana. So I mean, sorry to cut you off, but like you gotta like take that in consideration. They're not giving McNulty unfair or overly fair treatment, and like he's the guy because of any specific thing. He might just be the best option we have as of week one in the season.
All right, we're gonna move away from the quarterbacks because it's you know, like I said, preseason. Marty said, I got to scroll up.
Colorado Eagle makes a good point. Maybe that's the case.
By the way, 817 fan said Toon was better than mediocre.
He wasn't bad.
Subjective. He was a good guy.
Subjective.
Felt bad about his dog, but
I like
the bottom line is, you know, he was a great guy. He really was. But was he better than mediocre? Was he serviceable? Would he, if we had different people there, where would he fit? You know, there's a lot of questions there, but – All right, we're going to move on from the quarterback question.
One quick thing, because this is very telling. Sideshow Joe says, doesn't that speak to our lack of ability to develop quarterbacks? And that is, I think that is huge. Nail on the head. How many good quarterbacks has this program had?
Four.
In the entire history of the program?
That's going back to 1962.
Are you
going to
count DT in that? Because everybody hated him for so long, so then he turned out pretty well.
I think DT deserves everything he got because nobody
Which is crapped on.
anything. Exactly. And nobody expected anything out of him. He did not have the support of the fan base going into that season, and he turned it around, and a lot of great stuff happened.
Yeah, no, he absolutely did. But I mean,
there's
you're talking about a program that's been around for 100 years, and you're coming up with four. That's not
well. I'm pulling out the media guide, the last one the athletic department put out.
Riley Dodge,
2010. What?
Dodge was good.
Here we go.
Respect. he was injured too much though. But this guy, Marty's already saying Ramsey, Hall, Mayer, Davis. I mean, is that your answer
there? Yeah.
Well, no, I just said four to stack like I knew what I was talking about.
Thompson deserves to be there because he won a bowl game.
The five that Marty said, I think, are the five that are five. And then I think there's a pretty big gap after that.
Visa was good. He was on a horrible
team. Yeah, it was. Okay, so Ramsey, Hall, Mayer, Davis, there's somebody else we're missing.
We weren't playing good football last year when McNulty was playing. You know, again, like is Southern Mississippi a really bad team, a really great football team?
No,
and they beat us last year, and McNulty killed it. So doesn't that speak to the rest of our team?
Yeah,
he had a great game that week. I mean, he had a better game statistically that game in terms of just percentage and no turnovers and all that stuff than Thompson had the previous year when he won a bowl game.
And that's what you get with McNulty. He's not going to lose the game for you. He's not going to win the game for you either. And that's what's frustrating to the fans is they want a guy that can actually win a game instead of it rely on the rest of our talent.
What everybody needs to consider is that we're not sitting here disagreeing with any of the fan base that says that we don't have a great option at quarterback. They're probably right. Maybe we don't have a great option at quarterback. And is it McNulty's fault? Is it Dejon's fault? Is it Caleb Chumley's fault? Is it any of these guys' fault? No.
All right, just to get rid of the past 5 years, let's go back to 2010 and before, okay? Let's talk about quarterbacks in North Texas.
Oh, we're still talking about the quarterbacks.
Well, because we're filling here. So let's talk about passing efficiency. Who's number one?
Efficiency?
Yeah. Over the last 5 years?
No. This is 2000, before 2010, in the day.
It's Ramsey, isn't it?
No. Thanks for playing.
Visa.
Maybe Mitch Mayer.
It was Scott Hall, passing efficiency. Yeah, 2000 to 2004, Scott Hall, then Mitch Mayer, Scott Davis, Riley Dodge, Steve Ramsey, Visa, Jordan Case was the other one.
Visa threw like 85 times a game.
Right,
so
right. Touchdown
he's
pass.
He's going to have some bad ones.
Touchdown pass, Steve Ramsey was 69 in the 67-69 season. Then Mitch Mayer, Scott Hall, Scott Davis. You know, somebody brought up Visa there. Visa is in a lot of these
offense
these categories
because they threw so many balls
passing yards. You know, nobody, you've got Steve Ramsey at number two with 7,000 passing yards, then the number one is 8,500, and that was Mitch Mayer from 91 to 94.
But look at the head coaches that we've had. I mean, Mac runs the ball,
right?
Dickey ran the ball probably more than Mac does. I mean, Dickey was very run oriented, right. So you know, you're talking about what 16, 17 years of running offense, that's kind of how you define yourself. That's what you're going to get. You know, I mean, that's part of the issue here.
Right. All right. I was trying to see if there was anything else here.
There's not. Let's move on.
Just try to see if there's anything else that was interesting. Team passing. I was trying to find out what years we did the most passing. But
it would
passing
have to be attempts. Dodge. It would have to be Dodge.
Single game passing leaders, Mager versus SMU in 07.
Mager.
Yeah. And that was a great game, but we couldn't play defense and we lost the game.
So the receiver position is see what I'm doing here? Does anybody see this?
Wow.
600 plus for Danny Mager.
That's interesting. All right. So we're going to move on to the next topic. Okay, here's the first question. Final score of the SMU game. Go.
Against Baylor?
SMU. No, us.
Oh, I think North Texas is going to win, but I think it's going to be close. I'm going to say
95-93.
I'm going to come up with a weird score like 27-21.
27. I'm going to write these down. We're going to revisit these. So Harry, 27-21.
I think our field goal kicker is going to – I really think he's going to be good. I really think he's going to be good.
He is good. It's he's not going to be good. I think he already is good.
Harry's, and I think he's going to be a weapon for us all year too. But I just think we've got a little more than they do. I think they're going to make a game of it, but I think we're going to win.
So Harry's thinking they're going to kick 9 field goals. All right. Ashton, what do you got?
That's tough. I'm going to go I want to say 35-27 us.
35-27.
We sound like a bunch of homers right now.
When's the last time we scored 35 points?
Wow. I don't think SMU is going to have – I think they're not going to – I don't think their defense
is going to be
good.
It was SMU.
I don't think their defense is going to be any good.
You think the defense can score points, what you're saying, our defense?
I'm being shooting a little optimistic there. I think it's – again, this game is a totally up and this is a crapshoot, man. I mean, like we said last week, we have zero idea what to expect SMU turned into. Did they have the talent sitting there and June couldn't utilize it, which very well could be the case?
Are they rebuilding?
Too much Hawaiian music they were playing in practice? I don't know.
Do we have – I mean, are we in the same situation, though?
Absolutely.
They don't know what to expect either.
Absolutely.
So,
I think it's actually going to be close, and I don't want to make a prediction yet because I really don't want to make a prediction yet because I think there's some things that still could need to happen our way. We need to get everything really situated.
We need to see the Baylor game is what we need to do. But even then, we'll know what they're looking like, but we won't know what we're looking like. And does the Baylor game really give us a good measuring stick because they're paying Baylor?
Probably not. But I think a huge blowout, if they could keep it close for a half, that would worry me a little bit. But if Baylor just comes in and dominates, it's over at halftime, then, you know. I mean, what's the line on that game?
You
like
don't,
40 points or
you
something?
You don't want Baylor to kick the crap out of SMU, in my opinion. You don't want SMU to come in pissed off. I mean, I really don't think you do. I mean, it's – man, that's a rough comment on the board.
Too soon.
That is terrible.
Too soon.
Man. All right. I gotta regroup to that. I gotta regroup like Art Briles needs to regroup. But
All right, before we go to the next one, I'm gonna switch gears on you guys a little bit here.
Thank God.
A couple of non-football items. Housekeeping. No, I'm just kidding. these numbers came out and kind of explain these a little bit. The cost of attendance was brought up.
Yeah. Cost of attendance, you know, we got some information initially. I think it was from USA Today or some major national publication that they listed all the different conferences and where everyone was. And of course, cost of attendance is the new thing this year that they're doing to try to put some money in the players' pockets so they, you know, they're not starving and that they can go out and go watch a movie and just, you know, some. And I'm okay. I'm okay with that. I think that's a good thing, actually.
Beyond the Green hasn't gotten that check yet.
Yeah, that's right. We're still working on it for Beyond the Green. But the thing about it is that they are saying right now that North Texas was up the upper part of Conference USA in terms of the amount that they were paying. I think there was only like one of the Florida schools was higher than us, which – you know, everyone's out there saying that this is going to – if you think this isn't going to impact recruiting, you're crazy. I mean, if one school is going to be able to cut you a bigger check than another one for some, you know, players and prospects, that could be a game changer. So Vito just ran a story that said, you know, according to RV, they had not yet set that amount and that the publication that ran it was coming up with that, you know, by looking up statistics and, you know, what it would cost to go to UNT and cost of living in Denton, all that. So anyway, it's just interesting because, you know, it's here. I mean, it's time. And there's going to be some schools in Conference USA that will not pay it this year. And it'll be interesting to see how that impacts recruiting and other stuff.
Okay. Thought there'd be more on the Ashton. You got nothing?
No, I mean I was just kind of looking over. I was trying to look over the roster a second ago and just see what.
All right.
If there was so many other areas, but I mean, yeah, I think that is going to affect a lot of things. I think that once we kind of figure out exactly, you know, what that is, it's kind of. I was trying to read up about it the other day and trying to kind of wrap my head around it. It's not something that I'm really that familiar with this, you know, that kind of concept. But you know, I mean, yeah, it could really impact recruiting, especially actually.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about colleges. Main colleges in Texas, and I mean, and I'm just putting some information out there, just kind of keep it going. Acceptance rate, colleges in Texas. Who do you think has the lowest acceptance rate?
A&M.
Now, this is how many applicants applied, how many actually were admitted. Now, some of these numbers are skewed because some of them are very small schools, but let's talk about the main schools we think out of. Who has the lowest acceptance rate in Texas?
And this is public and private schools?
This is all schools.
All schools. Lowest in all of Texas?
Yeah.
Rice or A&M, I would say.
Like Letourneau.
Rice, actually. They had 15,000 applicants admitted, or 15,400. They admitted 2,500 for a 16.7.
Oh, I thought you were asking the other way.
Okay. No, they had the lowest acceptance rates at 16.7, which is you know, pretty good because, you know, obviously you got to be pretty smart. Then you've got some other real small schools like Assemblies of God and things like that. But then University of Texas, 38,000 applicants, 15,000 admitted for a 40% acceptance rate. Letourneau has 40, Texas Wesleyan 41. All right, so where do you think we fall against? Okay, let's Texas Christian and Texas. Where do you think we fall for acceptance rate against like Texas A&M?
I don't know exactly, but I know our the requirements to get in ours have gone up. It seems like every year. So
right. So. A school like SMU is about 50% of the applicants get in there, and obviously you have to have certain you know, criteria to get in. But,
yeah, like money.
So Texas A&M University, sorry, I'm scrolling down. Baylor's at 57.5. University of North Texas is 59.7. So we have 18,299 applicants. 10,900 were accepted, 59.7. University of Texas at Arlington had 10,000 applicants, 64 at a 60. So they were a little bit behind us or as far as they allow more people in. Sam Houston was 65. Texas Tech was 66. They had 19,000 applicants and 12,000.
So it's
they just stayed on the farm afterwards.
So it's easier to get into Texas Tech than it is Sam Houston.
You know, you kind of have to. It's kind of weird to look at it, but Texas A&M University College Station had 31,000 applicants and 21,000 were admitted at 69.5. So actually, more people are admitted after they've applied to A&M than people did to North Texas.
Hey, I mean, I think that's the exciting thing. You know, with North Texas right now is that the student population keeps growing and they're getting better students every single year. And they're more spirited students than back when in the old days.
And the number one easiest school in Texas to get into.
Easiest? Yeah. Tarrant County College.
The school had 6,240 applicants and they accepted 6,228. So that means only 22 people did not, no, 12 people didn't get in.
12?
If anybody's out there, there are 12 people that didn't get accepted. 99.8.
University of Phoenix.
99.8% of people were accepted to the University of Texas at El Paso.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty interesting. That was actually a higher acceptance rate than Paul Quinn College, which... yeah. So that's kind of interesting. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, Texas A&M Kingsville, University of Texas Tyler, Angelo State, those are all up in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, UTSA, Texas State are in the 75 range, 73 to 75. So it's kind of interesting. It was just some numbers though out there. Hey, does it really mean anything? I don't know, but it's kind of crazy. So
hey, I want to see I think everyone that got a degree from North Texas wants to see the value of it go up. So I think that's good news.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you look at the scores. Now, all this is kind of also tied into certain score levels and things like that.
Well, and it's applicants. I mean, right. You don't know who the applicants are. And maybe the applicants that are applying to certain schools may be, you know what I mean, may have better qualifications than – you know what I mean? So there's question marks.
Yeah, but I think you still see an overall, there's a difference between UTEP at one end and you know, Rice at the other. Now, there's obviously, you still have to, you can, I mean, I guess you could apply anywhere, but you still have to have a basic criteria to be able to get into the school.
That's right.
So that means, you know, I guess the lower your acceptance rate, the more, because, you know, obviously Texas is a hard school to get into, and you've got a lot of people that you're just not going to apply there because they're not going to do it. So
that's right.
Anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting. All right, second question. We need it. It's on the spot. Overall record for the year.
I will go with, and I'm Mr. Optimism, but I think we can win six games this year. So I'm going to say 6-6.
Yeah, I was going to say 6-6 as well.
Oh, you just copied me.
That is so really? Bogus.
No. No, I mean, I'd love to say 7-5. I really would. But I look at the schedule and, you know, I look at the team and it's hard to just be, you know, 5-7 probably, unfortunately, might make a little bit more sense. I think this 12 games in a row thing is going to be really tough. I think it really sucks. And I think that that's the I think that that could just give us a loss right there. Just at one point, just being exhausted and tired and just beat down, or injuries and not being able to recuperate, you know, something like that. I think that's something that we need to think about, really, you know. When
somebody's not so confident in Greer anymore, is he?
God, somebody's... I don't know how you label as the Greer guy. Hey, just on the record here, Harry can attest to this. What was I saying going into training camp out of training camp? Who should have been our week one starter?
Last year?
Yeah. I said McNulty.
I thought you said
McNulty.
Williams.
Yeah. I definitely said Dejon. He's super smart. It'd be great. I think 7-5 is attainable. We need to go 3-2 in these first five games. If we don't go 3-2, I think we're hurting.
We need to win the SMU game. If we win the SMU game,
it's an equal bowl game. We won it last year.
It doesn't, but
crap the bed.
But
after
let me
that.
Give you the other side of this. Okay, if we lose that SMU game,
does it set the tone?
Absolutely.
If we lose SMU, man. It all bets are off. I mean,
well,
I'm falling. Really,
I am right there with you to an extent.
That was huge.
I'm with you to an extent, but there's sometimes when we've tanked our first game and then go on to realize that this team is actually pretty darn good.
Tulane in 2013. I mean, that was a huge disappointment, but we came back and ended up winning a bowl game.
It was a necessity. That game had to happen the way it did. For us to really, after that game, man, everything was different. The mindset was different. It was really great to see everything after that game, because the next week I think we just whooped up on
Ball State.
No,
not Ball State.
No, Middle Tennessee.
Yeah,
was our next game. We already beat the pants off of Ball State.
And remember when we beat the pants off of Ball State, and then all of a sudden Ball State gets on this tear. Wasn't that the year that they?
Not yeah. only
collarbone.
So
we haven't talked about it yet, but there's like 26 buses of students that have already been reserved that are going to the game. I mean, I put a poll up on the board, and they're talking about, people are saying confidently there's going to be 5,000 UNT fans, which would be awesome. We don't have a first week game, so we're all building up momentum. Everyone's going to be excited. You kill that, man, you hurt the season. I mean, I think you hurt home attendance and just the hope for having a good year.
You'll have a great attendance against Rice because it's the first home game.
It's at 1:30.
You won't have great attendance at Rice.
You always have great attendance the first game, even if you're playing some wanker school.
We never have great attendance anyway.
Well, no. Oh, dude, see, there you go with the negative waves.
Oh, man.
I'm
speaking the truth. Everybody knows that. We're not.
Righteous and good? No, the first
game. Because of Josh Greer, we don't have great attendance.
I don't think a 1:30 is going to kill a first game, because we've had wacky first games before, but people come out, they're excited, they want to see the team first game. Down the road, when you have a 1:30, that's where it's going to kill you. I don't think the first game of the season, if we have decent weather, I think you'll have a great – the students will show up, and the students have been really coming. I think you're going to have a good attendance the first game.
Here's the thing about the whole SMU must win. I don't believe it is a must win in a sense of the rest of our season. I think it's a must win because it's a crosstown rival, plain and simple.
Yeah.
That's why it's a must win. We want to go there. We want to kick the crap out of them at their house and make them eat dirt and cry to their rich – large homes. But I mean, it's what I don't think that it's going to destroy the season. It's a non-conference game. It's still not going to affect our conference record. I know that, you know, hey, everybody said that Tulane was a must-win game because that was our first game of Conference USA. We had to make a statement. It was a big deal. There was a lot of stuff going into that game. We lost. We got beat, and it sucked the way we went down. You know, the blocked field goal return for a touchdown, pick six, I think, and then the stupid field goal at the end. we lost in that game. It's our first game of the season. We can bounce back from it, is my point.
Well,
it
says lose that game and you will not go bowling. Ben said that in the room. You know what? It's the first game out of conference game. We don't know what SMU's going to – I mean, maybe SMU pulls something out of the hat like they did a few years ago. We don't know. I hate to say everything hangs on the first game. Texas last year, we thought, okay, this is just Texas. The quarterback situation really, really made us really wonder what was going on. But and the horrible stats from that game really made us be concerned. But then we kind of bounced back. I don't think you can go off of the SMU game, but I think we'll have good attendance for the first home game. I know we're going to have great attendance for the SMU game. I mean, that's pretty obvious from everything I've heard. A lot of people are going to that game. That's going to be a great attendance, but we will not know. The good thing is we get to see them play Baylor to see what they look like against a tough team. And then if after we play them, if we win or lose, we'll be able to judge where we're at.
It's a great barometer for where this – and until that game, honestly, everything we say here is speculation. Poop. I mean, it is. Until we see them play, we don't really know. So I just wish it wasn't 20-something days away from now.
There's a lot of things up in the air right now. I mean, we were saying, you know, last week there's – you know, SMU is a brand new team, and essentially there's a lot, there's so much changing on the North Texas side of things, even though we have a lot of guys coming back that, yeah, I mean, you are getting a total just throw it up in the air and like, let's see who, I mean, we don't play well on the road. Is this a road game? It's around the corner. I mean, are we amped up to play? Are the guys in the right mindset? We had the week before SMU's not as rusty as we are. You know, they're going to be coming off a game. I think that's huge. I think that is so huge to be coming off a win or a game, probably a bad loss, let's face it. But they're going to be playing at home. They're going to have some energy. We need to get – the guys need to be prepared and motivated to win this game. And that's the one thing I guess I do agree with. If we lose badly, it's because we weren't prepared correctly. And the guys, if the guys don't show up, then yeah, then maybe that is par for the course of the season, or it's a huge wake up call, and we just don't need to look at SMU like it's an easy win.
Well, I think the first two games between those two, SMU and then playing Rice, and just as Sideshow Joe said, Rice should be a better team than SMU. That's what it looks like it should be. That should give us a better. Those two games will let us know we're going to be the rest of the season.
So Ashton was in Denton. Any other things that you saw, that you heard, that you want to share with the fans out there?
Yeah, so a couple of things I've observed recently at practice the past few times I've been up there is McNulty? I'm just kidding.
this guy really likes McNulty.
Yeah. You know, McNulty, he's so good in the class. Anyway, I'm just kidding. I can't even finish that sentence.
His picture's his background.
I know, yeah.
Oh, screensaver.
And no, it's Greer. Duh. It's Greer punching Dejon in the face. Anyway, Thaddeus Thompson, I really like more. More and more I see him, the more and more I like him. He started off kind of slow. He looks the part, but he started off kind of slow with playing the threes, and now he's getting sprinkled in, and I think you're going to see him a lot this year, and I think that he's got tons of potential. There could be a lot of rotations at receiver. I think that you could go out. I think if the season started tomorrow, you're going to see in a three wide set, I think you're definitely going to see Carlos and Turner. Turner Smiley, I said, you know, he was a kind of a sleeper dark horse for me. He may not be a sleeper anymore. I mean, the guy is, I guess, expected to actually come out there and make some plays, and I heard McNulty one time tell him about a route, and he said, "I'll just lob it up there, and you go grab it." I mean, they've got confidence in him to go get the balls, and he's got athleticism. He's fast. He can make the plays. He put on a little bit of weight in his arms. He looks a little bit bigger. That's good. But I think you're going to see some rotations outside of those two. I think on the number three, the third receiver, you could see a Thaddeus Kidsey Gorey rotation, which again isn't a bad thing. You know, I mean, it we want Gorey to get out there, but again, his first game at SMU is going to be his first game.
And isn't it somewhat ironic that Thaddeus can show up and be in the, you know, starting rotation, but, you know, DeMarcus, no. And is that a positional?
Of quarterback's just a way harder position. I mean, they're talking about a receiver. I mean, receivers sometimes God-given talent. As we know and we saw last year, God-given talent at quarterback doesn't always win. And I think that back to the receivers, though, you know, a guy that I really like and I talk about him a lot, so I really hope he performs this year, is Akiran. Rutherford is really starting to get it, I think. He's such a crazy mismatch. I mean, if we can just get this guy in some space, and I don't think SMU is going to be rolling out, you know, 6'5" DBs. You know, I would love to see O'Kieran go across the middle and go over top and go grab a couple balls and just grab, just go up there and get some first downs.
I like
and,
the way he looks.
Yeah,
he
man. Looks I mean, it's good. Just it. We just said grab a couple balls, and then you said he likes the way he looks. And the same, we put that in the same two sentences. That's kind of weird for the people just tuning in. But I like receiver, man. I really do. I think it's going to be. I think the receiver's a really deep position for us this year, and it really hasn't been. I mean, I think last year that wasn't a great receiving court. Darius Terrell never really was anything that we were kind of hoping he would be out of the transfer from a school like UT.
Look good in the uniform.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, more of that.
Willie Avery, Sideshow Joe asked, Willie Avery be used in motion out of the backfield on third downs?
Well, we don't have a Will Avery. I think we have a Willie Ivory. Just kidding. We know what we do. I mean, you know, yeah, I don't know about out of, yeah, I think out of the backfield on third downs, I think that's a change of pace back. I think that he's a small, quick back that's going to be used in space a lot. Ezard and Tucker, I just saw somebody bring that up, and that's somebody, that's a couple guys I mentioned last week. Dude, I really think you're going to see both those guys this year. I really do, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Maybe a bad thing in terms of if we see a lot of them, that means we're injured somewhere, but nothing right now, obviously. But Ezard and Tucker, you know, I mean, Tucker's a guy that, you know, he switched positions too. He went from DB to running back.
Right.
So maybe he's starting to figure it out and get it down. And it looks like he, you know, he has good practices. He's kind of one of those steady guys that doesn't really have a lot of bad touches, bad assignments. There just may be a lack of just that he's not Jeffrey Wilson kind of thing. He's not just this prototypical stud running back that just needs to kind of break out of his shell. Tucker's probably going to be more of a grinder.
So what about the offensive lineman that the redshirt freshman, you know, Vito wrote the article saying that they were looking at him instead of tackle guard, you know, looking at him at guard. What about that situation?
I think he's a tackle. I mean, I think that he's going to be a tackle. I don't think that there's – I would have to dispute anything about moving to guard. I think he's listed as a tackle, and everything I've seen from him, he's a tackle.
Okay.
I think that Micah is much better served inside, and I think that Miles has the raw ability. Miles is a redshirt freshman, and he's going to have make some mistakes. I mean, you know, why Barbo turned out to be a great player for us, and he wasn't amazing as redshirt freshman year. He'd be the first one to tell you that. He had to figure a lot of things out. So I think they're gonna ride the Chris Miles, you know, wave a little bit. And I'm not the president of the Josh Greer fan club. I don't even know where that's coming from. It's hilarious though.
He's your hero.
Just because I think that he's a number two over DeMarcus, that's sad. That's just really sad.
Hey, anyway, give the guy. We all ought to give Josh Greer another chance.
No, you know what? We're making light here, obviously, because we still have 16 days and 19 hours and 58 minutes before the first game.
57 minutes.
Which is so ridiculous. So
three more podcasts before the first game.
We are. So next week, we're going to have an exclusive interview with our newest sponsor, the guy that does the potato parcel. For those of you who didn't see that, they wanted one of our proud alumnus.
They going to sponsor the show?
You know what I'm talking about, right?
No.
You didn't see this thing?
No.
This guy is making $10,000 a month, and people will go to this website, Potato Parcel, and he writes a personal, whatever message they want, on a potato and mails it to somebody, a random potato message. God. And he's making all sorts of money. And the guy, if you saw his picture, he's standing there. Here's his picture. He's standing there wearing overalls or coveralls. Or,
the 10K per month part of it.
And though. He's wearing, sunglasses in his apartment, writing on potatoes and shipping them out every day. And is making $10,000 a month doing this. This is what the graduates are doing these days. So, go North Texas.
Go Mean Green.
Well, you know, what's so funny is because it was on the news, and then Cynthia Izaguirre, you know, who's a North Texas alum, after they talked to him, she goes, go Mean Green.
I met her at a party one time.
Can we mark that and keep that like a drop? I met her. That's a Harry Bragg drop.
No, it was a neighborhood party, and it was a Christmas party or something, and it was just kind of cool to see her in person.
A couple other guys.
She mentions Mean Green all the time.
Yeah, she's
anything awesome. Anything that was Denton, she loves
And, man, everything, she's sincere. When I met her in person, it's not like she puts an act on. She's that way. She's just very friendly. So, sorry.
No,
back to football.
No, we don't have to talk football. We can talk more potatoes and other stuff, maybe some famine. There's a couple guys I wanted to also talk about, freshmen, and we've mentioned them a few times in the past couple weeks, but Ashton Preston, great name, and Nate Brooks, both. I mean, I think we're going to see these guys playing as true freshmen. And Preston looks pretty good. I'm pretty impressed. I don't, you know, I see him being mixed in with the twos and ones sometimes, the ones and twos. And I think that there's kind of an experiment there. And, you know, again, it might not be a bad thing. But, you know, every team, somebody said this earlier in the chat room, I think that every team plays guys that are new and it works out. So Keyshawn came on last year, McLean, and played really well.
Well,
as a true freshman.
Yeah, so we'll see some names pop out that we haven't seen.
That's what's
we
didn't fun expect. About it.
Yeah,
to
exactly. Well, you know, because we all look at the program going, wait, who the hell was that? You know, what was that? Who was that? You know, and then I'm looking and texting Harry, and then 10 minutes later, he finally gets the text because of the signal's so bad, and then he doesn't know what I'm talking. And it's that's how it goes, but we're still trying to figure out who these guys are. And that's going to be that way for the first two games at least. So, you know, that's something to look
forward
to.
Especially this year. There's a lot of new faces.
Hey, somebody brought this up on the board here, and might as well bring it up since we've got a few more minutes. What is the tailgating situation at SMU? Is there going to be a setup? Oh, I know there's the Boulevard, and those people stay out there until after the game's over. They never actually go to the game.
They don't even care about the game. They don't care about their deck shoes and their Sperry's and their, you know.
Well, the Boulevard's
plated.
The Boulevard's, you know, where everybody goes, but there's no parking there, and it's going to be – I know that you can probably get a tailgating pass, but I don't know anyone that's doing that.
I didn't know if there was anything. Yeah, that's what I was going to wonder how it was going. Hey, I want to bring up something else. Do you think – and this is overall in college football with certain schools – do you think that Texas has a future – I don't say support issue, but – what happened to SMU? SMU started being super ultra elitist, kind of. The students that they're getting at SMU these days, a lot of foreign students, and they're not into the athletic part of it. Because it has become such an elite university, so hard to get into, and so particular about certain things and grades and like that, has it become that is what's killing their program? Because the students they get now do not support, and the alums that were supportive. Now, I know we can talk about the death thing and all that, but no, schools like Rice and SMU over the years, their base, the demographics of their students, and what I'm seeing of the people that are going to Texas now, you know, my wife's a Texas grad, so is yours. When they're like, if I had to do it again, the programs, the fields, the students, it wouldn't have been the same college experience.
When I worked on an SMU show, I sold my soul apparently, but I worked on an SMU show. The company I was working for was producing the Climb show, which is kind of where I spun Beyond the Green off of back in 2010. And that was the year that they just come off the bowl game. They played the bowl game the year before at Hawaii Bowl. I think they beat Nevada. They beat the pants off Nevada. And that was the year that they came out of nowhere and went like 9-5 or something like that anyway. Final record. And I was amazed at how little support they had from the fans throughout that season. You know, they were playing well the entire year. They ended up playing for the conference championship. They ended up playing a bowl game at home that year. They played the Armed Forces Bowl, and since Amon Carter was getting renovated, they played it at Ford. Right. And they played Army, and they got beat. And it wasn't really a great turnout for SMU fans. SMU fans would sit there and boo and yell at the players from the, and it's real tight knit there. So the sidelines, you could see, or you could really the bench on the sidelines is about 10 feet from the stands. So you were getting a lot of people that would just call players out. And I would kind of look back and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why would you yell at your own team, the team that you're here supporting? Why would you yell at them like that? Like, get it together. Come on, June, get your head out of your ass. You know, saying all this stuff. And I was like, wow. You know, they won last week by like 50 against like Washington State. Now you're yelling at them because it's a close game. They played Houston for homecoming that year, lost. and that was basically a Houston home game. I mean, it was bad. And I was really amazed the entire year at the lack of support that they were getting. And I didn't see, I wasn't thinking about it the way that Evan was just describing it, but I just think in general that school's never going to be a big sports school. I think they were winning all these years, and with June, I mean, again, they played for a conference championship. They played UCF for the conference championship that year, and they weren't selling out. They weren't getting close to selling out. People on the Hilltop, I guess this is made for that, they weren't even watching the game. And the fans really, they don't even know how to be sports fans, in my opinion. They don't even know how to be a good fan.
But to Evan's point, I think, honestly, I think one of the advantages North Texas has is in numbers. And I think if we could ever get some consecutive winning seasons together, you would see that, especially with how they're indoctrinating the freshmen, yep. You know, and really trying to get them over at Apogee and Coach Mack and RV speak to him.
I think
and stuff like that.
You're seeing more student participation and more student fervor for the school and spirit than you've seen ever at that type of level at the school. And you just see that certain schools are taking different routes. The entry requirements to Texas are so hard now. The students that they typically see, they're working so hard that a lot of them don't really care about athletics, and that's what you're seeing. A&M, which accepting a lot, don't have the high entry requirements. They're still bringing in and still, you know, the whole brainwashing Nazi thing. But that's huge there. But you're going to see, I just think you're going to keep seeing it go the other way. And you used to see, what still drives me crazy is all these people that I see on Facebook, people I grew up with that have no affiliation with Texas. No affiliation
t-shirt
with A&M.
Fans.
They are T-shirt fans. They're like, woohoo, my school's better than you didn't even go to that school. Yeah. You had
Which
like a
one?
Second cousin. Any of them, yeah. Texas or A&M.
UT's just, the worst, especially.
It's like a Chevy Dodge. I mean, a Chevy Ford thing. They just, you know, that's how they get into it. But
Which is okay. I mean, I get it. It's okay, but it's just like when they rub it in your face, it's hard.
Well, that's the thing. You're going, you didn't go to school, or you went to a school that doesn't have a team, and so you follow this one and you pick one that's a winner because that's what you feel you got to follow. Don't come to me and act like you have any real interest or really anything invested in this
you
school.
You don't understand.
And that drives me crazy. But I think we are positioned well that we have a lot of students, the demographic in North Texas is still such that we get people that would support the program. And a lot of schools like Rice and SMU are really struggling with that.
I
SMU
agree.
Can't get the T-shirt fan.
No.
Rice can't get the T-shirt fan. We don't really have to because we have students that actually still care about this thing. So we're in a good position compared to a lot of schools like Tulane or, you know, those others.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that we have more tradition, even if it's not a winning tradition. I mean, there's still tradition out there. I've actually been to 5 or 6 Rice games, not, you know, just playing other teams, you know, because I did a bunch of Conference USA stuff before North Texas got in the conference, and it never seemed like a really good place to watch a football game. It seemed that, you know, it was kind of lame. Even last year, you know, they were drilling us, and it was like whatever. Nobody really cared. The fans were there. It was kind of like a UAB. Like, you know, you don't.
Yeah,
it's not a big deal. And I think that's kind of bad because, you know, they got a great coach, and they technically have a program that's kind of on the up. In a way, they might have a down year this year, but, you know, if they find another quarterback again, you know,
well, and fine. Money solves a lot of the world's problems. I hate to say it; it's not everything, but they're already talking about at SMU doing an indoor practice facility, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
You know, that's the thing SMU's always had in their favor is they've always got money.
Yes, but yeah. I think the people that will give them money are dying out. The people that will say that will keep adding money to a sinking ship. And the new students that graduate are not the students that care about that. So
valid
I think
point.
You might have a few big donors, but at a certain point you're throwing good money after bad, and they can't keep it going. Texas has a long history, a lot of T-shirt fans. They keep that going for a program, but I don't think that a huge portion and a growing portion of their student base will support that. Now, this could be 20, 30 years down the road where it really starts to affect them. But right now, obviously it's not. But I really see that happening. And I don't see how SMU is going to change that.
Yeah, I think SMU, it's been saved by the donors over the year, the boosters, the Paul Lloyds that will come in and just be like, hey,
exactly.
You need a complex? Here you go. And that's really what happened. That's why his name's on the front. And as long as he's still around, which I think he's not that old. I think he's still around and everything. I mean, unfortunately, it's not going to change. And they're going to be able to go get a coach like Chad Morris and, you know, maybe a rising coach, you know, in the ranks. I mean, we as North Texas fans just have to hope that he's not the kind of coach that he may be coming in. I mean, this may be a savior, or this may be a guy that's just – he's a really good OC, but he's not a head coach. Yeah. You know, and then we got to hope that that's the case.
Well, we play him for like 20 years, so we'll get to watch what transpires there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's just a total crapshoot again. We don't know if the SMU is going to be that great. And you know, we keep talking about Chad Morris, but you know, who's running their defense? I don't even know who's running their defense right now. I mean, and they didn't have a good defense last year. So you got to think that if we can just put some points on, I mean, it may be a 45-35 game. You know, we may have to score points on these guys.
All right. So I added more quarters in. We got Mixler up and running again, and we're 55 minutes into this thing. So we're going to have to go ahead and shut it down. We still have two more podcasts. So next week, I've already got on the lineup, we're going to talk about the top five intersections in Denton. So that's going to be our big topic of discussion next week.
Bingo fish trap.
Bingo fish trap. I know exactly where that's at.
Bingo fish trap.
No, you know what? That might be a good list now that I think about it.
Yeah.
People would know. That Mingo Fish Trap, I bet you some people in the people.
We'd probably get yelled at about being fan clubs of certain streets, though, and we'd probably give too much support to one street.
Yeah, the Bloods and the Crips have one part of town. Yeah.
One street wouldn't get as much love as the other street, or the backup street would not be the, you know.
Right, right. And we don't want to give preferential. The Greasers and the Socias, they're on different sides of the town. We don't want to go through that.
The Jets and the Sharks.
Right, right. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and wrap that up. I forgot I had the music playing in the background. So we'll stop there. We got two more weeks of nonsense before the season starts, and we really start sinking our teeth into some real numbers and find out what exactly we have. So with that, this is Evan.
This is Harry.
This is Ashton.
Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.